Wisconsin has two legislative houses. Elections for state assembly are every 2 years, while Senate races come up every 4 years. So it's easy to understand why the incumbent assembly representative in the 29th District, Rob Stafsholt of New Richmond, would decide to run for state senate against Patty Shockner, the Somerset Democrat who won a special election in 2018 after longtime Republican Senator Sheila Harsdorf resigned to take a position in Scott Walker's administration. We'll hear from Stafsholt and Shockner in a few weeks, but today we hear from the two candidates hoping to replace Stafsholt in the assembly. It's the candidates for the 29th District Assembly seat with us today on the West Side. Good morning. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Thank you for joining us today. Our guests are Clint Moses of Menominee. He's a Republican and a member of the Menominee Board of Education. He operates his own chiropractic clinic and lives on a small farm. He defeated two other Republicans in the August primary to take a spot in the November ballot. Clint Moses, welcome to the West Side.
Good morning, Dean.
John Calabrese of Menominee is the other candidate with us today. The Democrat is a member of the Dunn County Board of Supervisors. He owns his own woodworking business, and this is the second consecutive run for the Assembly, having lost to Stafsholt in 2018. John Calabrese, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Dean. Good to be here.
The 29th Assembly District includes parts of St. Croix and Dunn counties. Cities in the district include Menominee, New Richmond, and Glenwood City, and the villages of Baldwin, Hammond, Woodville, Boyceville, Star Prairie, Knapp, Downing, Deer Park, and Wilson are also included. A big part of this exercise in democracy is your opportunity to ask questions of the candidates. Two ways you can do that. One is by calling 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. The other is to email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Now, because it's important that we give the candidates as much time as possible, we won't be doing extended breaks asking for donations, even though we are nearing the end of our fall member drive. However, if you appreciate the West Side in general, and these debates in particular, I would encourage you to make your pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio to support election coverage that you just won't hear anywhere else. To make that pledge, you can go to WPR.org or you can dial 888-202-2552. Now, that's different than the call-in number I gave you. The pledge number, 888-202-2552. So let's begin. John Calabrese, you ran for the 29th Assembly back in 2018. You captured 42% of the vote, losing to incumbent Republican Rob Stafsholt. Why run again?
Well, thank you, Dean, and I'd like to reiterate how much I appreciate this opportunity to be on here on this Friday. My opponent, for whatever reason, has decided to not attend longstanding traditional debates like the League of Women Voters in Menominee and the Veterans of Foreign Wars Auxiliary in New Richmond, so I really appreciate it and ready to get into it here. I've been tracking and following Wisconsin politics incessantly, almost addictively, for 10 years. I was the head of a all-volunteer group trying to get money out of politics, and I've remain driven and remain focused on it because I learned so much about how our state government works, or rather doesn't work. And I desperately want to get that across to my neighbors on the left, on the right, and everywhere in between. And in those 10 years, I thought that I learned almost everything that I could. But now that I've been on the Dunn County Board of Supervisors, I've learned even more about how state government really hog ties and is detrimental in a lot of ways to all the services we rely on and how they strangle county governments all across the state. And so I feel a drive to try to fix that. The 29th Assembly District has been for almost two decades now represented by rubber stamp Republicans who do as they're told from Madison, much to the detriment of the people in the district. And so I am driven to change that and to help my neighbors.
That's the Democrat John Calabrese from Menominee. Clint Moses, you made it through a three-way primary in August. You've been campaigning a long time. Why do you want to represent the 29th Assembly District?
Well, Dean, like you had said, and once again, thanks for hosting this opportunity. I look forward to discussing the issues with my opponent. Like you said on the intro, I live on a small farm in the Menominee Township with my wife, Nora, and my four daughters. In addition to farming, I own and operate a couple businesses locally. When I'm not working, I'm either attending one of my girls' activities, doing family stuff, or serving my community. Over the years, I've got a lot of experience serving my community, not only professionally as a chiropractor, where I'm concerned about people's health and well-being, but also by serving on various boards, charitable organizations, from the Boy Scouts, nursing home boards. I'm the past chair of the Community Foundation of Dunn County, past president of the Menominee Rotary Club, and I'm currently a school board member, like you said, for the School District of Menominee area, where I serve as board clerk. My experience on school board motivated me to run primarily because there's a number of things that are beyond our control that's tied up at the state legislature. You know, when people want policy change and that type of stuff, as a local school board member, we can set local policy for the school board, but we don't have a lot of control over it. We just don't have a lot of say in what happens there. I also decided to run because most of my days, quite frankly, are spent listening to friends and neighbors and patients complain about things, and it's not always health-related. So I think I'm the well-rounded candidate with the experience and skills that can succeed for everybody in the 29th. I've spent my life giving back to my community, serving patients professionally. I'm new to statewide politics. I'm a new face there. I am not a political agitator. I've been around Menominee quite a bit. I'm well known down here. One of those, I just got into it mainly for my kids and your kids. You know, I'm concerned about the future of this country that I love and this state that I love.
That's Clint Moses. He is from Menominee, and he's the Republican running in the 29th Assembly District. If you have questions for the candidates or something you'd like to bring forward to the program today, two ways you can do it. Call 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And we'll kick it off with an email question from Jeremy, who sent this question to ideas@wpr.org. Here's Jeremy's question. As both candidates are business owners, how are they planning on focusing on the job while governing, while still maintaining their existing businesses without it affecting the job performance of representing the people who elect them? As a chiropractor, I'm sure Dr. Moses has a significant patient load to see to, and as a woodworker, Mr. Calabrese has orders to fill. Will either of you be stepping away from your primary professions to focus on the job you would be elected to earn the $50,000 a year plus salary that you would be paid? Clint Moses, what's your plan with your clinic should you win the election?
I am well prepared for that. I've thought about that a lot. I plan to step away significantly. Currently, I treat patients about 45 to 50 hours a week. My plan is to see patients probably one day a week. Long-term clients that I've seen for years and years, we're actually going to hire an associate to come in and cover for me. We've had associates in our office before. We had massage therapists, some extra help, and then COVID kind of hit, and that kind of cut back on some of those plans. But, yeah, that's our plan going forward. I do practice with my wife. 95% of our clients will see either one of us. I love practice, and I think it's important for our legislators to still be on the ground, boots on the ground, in business, in their communities, and have a little bit better pulse of what's going on. So I do plan to continue practice, but even me, I can put in 40 hours a week in the legislature if I have to or more and still do my job adequately and from afar. So I'm very much focused on making sure that we succeed, and I'm not just down there as a rubber stamp, as some would say. I'm out there representing the people in our district in Menominee, New Richmond, Baldwin, Woodville, you name it. So I have a good plan for that.
John Calabrese, to Jeremy's question, will your woodworking business change if you're elected?
Yes, it will change dramatically. I love this question because it tells me that Jeremy has his ear to the ground in terms of how politics works in Wisconsin. I will pretty much step aside from it completely. It is a good-paying job to be a state legislator, and one of the things that drives me, as I said in my open, is to let people know, as apparently Jeremy knows, how things actually work in Madison and in the party that is in control of the legislature and has been for the last 10 years, the Republican Party. It's largely a club of landlords, real estate developers, and wealthy small business owners who see it as a bit of a side job so that they can write laws that favor their friends and their own businesses. And that's not how it should be. It's a good job with great benefits. And I have plans to attend not only every one of my committee hearings, which might sound basic, but our current representative, Rob Staffschultz, skipped about 52% of his committee hearings last time as he opened his own small business in Richmond during the legislative session. And so people like Jeremy apparently are aware of how all that works. I will not only do my legislative work, I will attend the county board meetings in Dunn County and St. Croix County when possible, all the town board meetings when possible, hold as many town halls when COVID-19 makes that possible, and if not, we'll do it online. This will be my full-time job in the legislature, which has not been in session for months on end now, is an embarrassment to the entire state, and we're going to fix that.
You can join the conversation by emailing us at ideas@wpr.org or calling 800-228-5615. And that's what Jim from Colfax did, and Jim is on the line to ask his questions of the candidates. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I'm wondering about private schools. Private schools receive public tax dollars, and they're not really held accountable to the open meetings law and don't have to allow access to their budget like public schools are required to do. How do you guys feel about tax dollars funding private schools through the Wisconsin Parental Choice Program?
Let's take Jim's question first to John Calabrese. John Calabrese, Jim wants to know, what do you think of private schools getting public tax dollars?
Thanks for the question, Jim. I think it's ridiculous that private schools get public tax dollars. This is one of the things that I would love to bring to the people, to my neighbors, to let them know about, because it's something that if people learn about, they will genuinely be outraged, and a lot of people will be surprised. We have to remember, for those of us in political bubbles, how many people aren't paying attention for whatever reason. People are busy. It's a maddening process. Half the people don't vote. But the fact that not only tax dollars go to these private schools, but that they are less accountable than public schools is an embarrassment. The fact that tax dollars go there from people who don't even have the choice in their districts to attend private or religious schools, they still have to pay the taxes. That's ridiculous. Public schools, especially in rural areas like ours, are the not only the heartbeat of the community, but they are the economic driver. They provide a lot of jobs. They provide a lot of health care for the community. We need to work to dismantle the voucher school program in its entirety. We need to remember where it came from. It came from wealthy donors who have a special interest in pushing that and in dismantling public schools and teachers' unions. And I think that no taxpayer dollars should be going, no public dollars should be going to private institutions.
Clint Moses, with your position as clerk on the Menominee School Board, I would think this is kind of an interesting question for you. Where are you on the topic of vouchers, publicly funded vouchers for private schools?
It is. It's one I've given a lot of thought. Full disclosure, I was a complete public school kid, attended Menominee High School, attended UW-Stout, attended University of Minnesota, so I've been public school all the way. My kids are all public school. For the most part, we are very blessed up in this part of the state to have great schools, great districts around here that do a very good job. I'm proud of what our Menominee School District has accomplished, especially in these challenging times. That being said, with the COVID situation, it's brought to the forefront for me why it's important to have some school choice. There's certain things that some schools can't do for some of our kids. Some of our kids have special learning challenges, special needs, certain things that maybe occur in our public schools that we can't adapt and cater to some of the students as well as could possibly be done in some of the other situations. So it's one of those, I do think some of our tax dollars should follow the student and the family. You know, for the most part, public schools do a great job. by no means do I want it to be some wealthy Ivy League type club or anything like that, but there is a need for some of those tax dollars to go. If one of my kids was not getting served properly, or they just say they couldn't learn virtually and our public schools insist on going virtual because of the COVID situation, and I need to put mine in a smaller, like old schoolhouse type setting or something like that where they can hands-on learn, that we need the ability to do that. So I am in agreement with my opponent in that there needs to be accountability. We can't pick and choose winners. The accountability that our public schools have should apply to the private schools as well. But, yeah, some of those tax dollars have got to follow the family and the child.
Jim from Colfax drops off, makes room for you at 800-228-5615 to join the conversation, 800-228-5615, or email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Our candidates are John Calabrese. He's the Democrat from Menominee, and Clint Moses, the Republican from Menominee. They're running for 29th Assembly District, the seat currently held by Representative Rob Stafschult of New Richmond. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back with our candidates for the 29th Assembly District, Clint Moses, the Republican from Menominee, and John Calabrese, the Democrat from Menominee. And let's go to the phones for another question. This is Martha from Menominee. Martha, thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you for hosting this important forum. My question has to do with the coronavirus. The numbers in Wisconsin are staggering and on the up and up. I don't know if you've seen the statistics lately, but I just heard on the news that we're like third in the nation for rising infection rates. My question has to do with two-part. One is, historically, people from Wisconsin have always risen to the occasion to dedicate themselves to the service of our country. My parents and grandparents went without sliced bread. My grandmother went without nylons for years. Sugar was rationed. Gas was rationed. People made huge sacrifices. The Republicans in the state legislature closed down the governor's stay-at-home order, and the results are not good. So my question is twofold. What do you think explains, and I'd like each candidate to answer, the Republicans' doubt of the patriotism in fighting this enemy, why they would doubt that people from Wisconsin are patriotic and are willing to sacrifice by wearing a face mask? What do you think explains this, and what would each candidate do to restore the faith of people in western Wisconsin to their government, that their government cares about their well-being? Thank you.
Thank you, Martha. Let's move that question to Clint Moses first. Clint Moses, some of your fellow Republicans have said that the governor has gone too far with the mask mandates and other mandates he's put forth. Where are you on those issues, and how do you rate the state and local response to the pandemic so far, and why do you think it's a matter of patriotism?
I think early on, I think the response could have been quicker. I think more even at the federal level, I think it could have been quicker, but there was so much partisan bickering and fighting back and forth. And I think as far as restoring faith, I think transparency is a big deal, obviously, with any, whether you're talking local county board, school board, legislature, or even our state or federal government. I think transparency is a big deal, so people start to regain trust. I think people are tired of the partisan bickering back and forth and the political games that go on with it. As far as the numbers going up in Wisconsin, I think a lot of it does have to do with the fact we do have a very, very large per capita college and university system. Interesting thing, you know, I'm here in Menominee, obviously, just like my opponent is, but, you know, these numbers keep going up at the universities like Eau Claire, La Crosse, and Stout, for instance. And as far as I can see, the Chancellor Frank here at Stout has done a good job, her and her team, with mitigation measures. The students I see walking even by themselves with no one else within a block of them are wearing masks, but yet the numbers still continue to climb. So I do think to some level these numbers are going to continue to go up. I mean, people need to be reasonable, be smart, practice good hygiene. Good hygiene has always been popular. But I am wary about the government stepping in and mandating things across the board. I think it's a slippery slope. I think we start mandating one thing, it's going to lead to another. People are going to lose their freedoms. So I'm a little weary of that. I do think, you know, people here are doing their best. I think they're trying to keep their friends and neighbors safe. And like I said, I think the delay was really your typical partisan bickering back and forth. I think it was government overreach right from the onset. So,
Clint Moses, can you speak to the Martha's question regarding how this became a matter of patriotism?
Well, like I said, I think a lot of that comes down to there's a certain side of the fence that thinks that constitutional rights are important and that people should be able to freely choose what's best for them and their families and their health care. and their safety and well-being. And I think there's another side of the fence that doesn't necessarily think people should have as many choices individually and that the government should make their decisions for them.
John Calabrese, is the governor acting within the authority of his office? What measures would you support in response to the pandemic?
I really appreciate the question, and I'm going to focus on the question and not let the insinuation that whatever side I am on does not care about constitutional rights. Just put that aside for a moment. But I think Clint is correct about the partisan bickering, but I think that if he wants to avoid that, he should probably not be attempting to join the team that he is joining. The governor and everybody in particular, and I've been critical of the governor before, and I will again when he deserves it, nobody saw this coming. Nobody knew how to prepare for it. This is the moment, like the caller was saying, that is akin to the aliens coming from outer space when we're all supposed to get together and fight together as a family and not as divided government like we always have. But it's proven that even a global pandemic is not above the partisan bickering in the state. Now, states like Ohio, Indiana, Alabama, Arkansas, all with Republican governors, all have instituted mask mandates, and there are no Republican lawmakers in those state legislatures complaining about that. If our governor was a Republican, if he issued a statewide mandate, all the Republicans would be in favor of it, and they would be seeking to follow it so that we can help our neighbors. These are some headlines just from today. Eau Claire County sees highest increase in COVID-19 cases. Local COVID-19 hospitalizations have approximately tripled in September. Hospitalizations putting strain on some Wisconsin hospitals. Trempealeau County sees surge in cases, and I can write them all down this morning. But this is all just from today. This is a panic moment, and we all have the opportunity to come together and rise to the occasion and do all the things that we might need to do, including going without, like the caller mentioned. And I think the best way to restore the faith is to show with your own actions, to be willing to step up and criticize your own party when they deserve it. I saw recently some pictures online of my opponent with Rob Staff Schultz, with Shannon Zimmerman, with the sheriff from St. Croix County, all packed into some place with about 100 people in there with no masks. You lead by example. This is the moment to lead by example. It is dire. It is a moment of death and unemployment, but what I see is hope. Because there is no getting back to normal. We need to turn the corner, and we need to offer new opportunities, new local food systems, new ways to do public education, new ways to fund our local governments. And it is a bright opportunity that we can seize with by instilling courage and hope in our neighbors. And that's what I hope to do.
Thank you to Martha for her question. 800-228-5615 is the number for you to call if you'd like to join the conversation with our candidates for the 29th Assembly District, John Calabrese and Clint Moses, both from Menominee. Let's stay in the kind of the response or the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. Businesses and their employees have been hard hit by that. U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that the August unemployment rate for the state did drop to 6.2%, way down from the 14.7% we saw in April. But that's still almost twice as where it was, twice as much as it was last year at this time. John Calabrese, does this falling unemployment rate mean that we're responding successfully to the challenges the pandemic has created for our economy? And is there anything else the legislature could do or should do to help?
I think it partially does. I think it shows that we're responding. But I think that it's less coming from the government in the response because the government has not been in session. Anything that the governor proposes is pushed aside by the state legislature because they have proven over the last 10 years that they're not really in it for solving problems. They're in it to siphon money from everybody on the ground to give to themselves and their rich friends. But I think what it more speaks to is the resiliency of our neighbors and the resiliency of human beings in general. When I look, and I think the metaphor is something akin to the frog in the boiling water, that when we're in it right now, it's hard to comprehend what's going on. But if you think of this year, here we are approaching the 10th month of 2020, and a very relatively short period of time, look at all the changes that we have made. All of our schools, all of us personally, with masks. Prepare. We remember to take our masks with us in the morning most times. Everybody has changed. Human beings are resilient, and they have a drive, and they want to survive. And so we need to take this moment and take that example set by our small business owners and by the workers and the people still trying to provide for their families. And we need to seize on that, and we need to help them out, and we need to push it forward to new systems instead of consistently saying and claiming that people who are, let's say, on unemployment or who need the help of county services for children with poverty or for people in communities where they're not doing well, instead of demonizing people that need help, this is a moment to say, let's help people because humans are inherently resilient. They inherently want to succeed. And government should be helping, should be run as a community and a big family, not a business. So I'm heartened by the response of my neighbors, and we can continue forward in a positive way.
Clint Moses, what's your assessment of the business climate in Wisconsin, and how can the state government help the economy recover from the pandemic?
One, I don't think it's necessarily how much the government's done to improve those numbers as of late. I think it more falls on the small, medium, even the larger businesses being adaptive in these times. I mean, more and more of our clients that are coming into our office are able to work virtually. They're working from home. I, unfortunately, my business, I can't do that. I have to be in person. So I'm using mitigation precautions. I'm wearing a mask when I need to, doing those types of things. But I think there's resiliency there. I think people are adaptive. As was brought up by one of the previous callers, Wisconsin people are notoriously hard workers, and they can do a lot with very little at times. I think our government needs to make it easier for businesses to function and to get people back to work safely, using precautions and whatever is needed as we go through these changing times. I mean, I don't think this is going to be something that's going to go away very quickly. I think a lot of the implementation, a lot of the changes that have occurred are probably going to be permanent at this point. I hate to use the term new normal, but there is definitely a side of that where things are not going to go back to the way they were prior to 2020. Those unemployment numbers are coming down, but also might be that there's just less people that are looking for work currently as well, because there are some people that don't want to go to work because maybe they don't feel safe right now, or maybe they've got children at home that they're trying to educate because they didn't feel safe sending them to school and they wanted to do the virtual or online, or they're homeschooling now at this point. So I think some of those numbers sometimes may be a little bit skewed that way, but I do think it has more to do with the individuals than it does the government as far as those unemployment numbers coming down.
Speaking of unemployment, this week Governor Evers asked the Department of Workforce Development Secretary Caleb Frostman to resign. In his press release, the governor noted several factors contributing to the backlog of unemployment claims in the state, including the unprecedented number of claims, outdated technology, and, quote, processes designed by Republicans to make it harder for folks to get those benefits, unquote. Clint Moses, what's your response to the unemployment backlog and the governor's charge against Republicans that it's partly their fault?
I think it's a good deflection technique. I mean, obviously, it's easy to blame the party that's not in control of that office at the current stance. So, you know, I know people locally that have been affected by that, that have been had unemployment claims in, and they're still waiting on them. I've got a daycare provider, for instance, that was laid off basically permanently and hasn't received a check yet as of, I believe this was Wednesday or Thursday. So to deflect that and say it's the fault of the Republicans for not acting quickly on the unemployment, I think is kind of comical, to be honest. I think it falls on the person that's in that seat. I'm glad to see that he's obviously working on improving that situation and maybe getting someone new in that office.
John Calabrese, any comment about the unemployment comp system and the complexity that is within that system right now?
Yes. My opponent says that it's easy to blame the Republicans, and it's true. It is easy because they are still in charge of the legislature. They've been in charge of the legislature for the past 10 years, and anybody who knows how things work in Madison, the unemployment system is one of the systems of benefits that the Republicans have been dismantling for a decade. They belittle and berate people who need assistance. They do it all the time. And what's comical for me is to see these lawmakers on Twitter when I go on there occasionally, and the people I've been following for a decade who post memes and make crude, crass jokes about people who need help from the government, all of a sudden complaining about people calling in who need unemployment benefits when they have made it entirely difficult for people to receive those benefits. Now, the governor has been in charge for 2 years, and there are things that he could have done unilaterally to improve that system. I don't know the ins and outs of how all that works. If he felt he needed to fire Secretary Frostman, then that's his decision. I don't know how everything works in that office. But to say that the Republicans haven't been demonizing and dismantling any social welfare assistance programs for the last decade is simply not true.
The candidates we're hearing from are John Calabrese, that's the voice you just heard. He's the Democrat from Menominee, and Clint Moses, he's a Republican from Menominee. They are seeking the 29th Assembly seat. It's currently held by State Representative Rob Stafschult, the Republican from New Richmond. He is running for State Senate against Patty Shockner in the 10th District. We'll have those two on in a few weeks. But right now we're talking about this 29th Assembly race with candidates Calabrese and Moses. Join the conversation, 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615, or ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back with the candidates in the 29th Assembly District, John Calabrese from Menominee and Clint Moses of Menominee. And we are taking your calls at 800-228-5615 or your emails at ideas@WPR.org. Let's move to the phones, and let's bring in Dan. Dan from Menominee, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question for the candidates. I'd like to know where their views are on abortion.
Simple enough. Abortion. Let's start with you, John Calabrese.
I believe in a woman's right to choose what to do with her own body.
Clint Moses, your views on abortion?
I'm a pro-lifer.
Okay. Well, as long as we're talking health care, access to affordable health care remains a hot topic, perhaps even more so during the pandemic, as some lose their employer-provided insurance coverage if they lose their job, for instance. Clint Moses, you are in the healthcare field. What's your plan to help your constituents in the 29th Assembly District get affordable and accessible healthcare when they need it?
Well, this is a real challenge. Unfortunately, in my job, I get to be bearer of bad news a lot of times. People were really, really excited when Obamacare, when the national health care came out. They thought it was great.
Hello? Oh, I think we lost... I think we lost Mr. Calabrese.
I'm still here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think we lost Mr. Moses. Are you with us, Mr. Moses? Okay. Well, that's not good, but we will press on a little bit here. I will remind you that you can call, and we've got a couple of open lines at 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. And you can email us at ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. It looks like we have Mr. Moses back. Sorry about that, Mr. Moses. Sounds like we lost you halfway through your health care answer, but you can go ahead and pick it up if you know where you were. Basically, we had asked you how you and your constituents in the 29th Assembly District get affordable and accessible health care when they need it.
I'll try this again. Yeah, I've got great experience, a great view on this, because I've been living in this world for quite a while. Like I started to say, you know, when Obamacare first came out, our clients were very, very excited that finally they were going to have coverage and things were going to get better for them. And then we got to be, as a provider, kind of the bearer of bad news, because a lot of times that coverage they had, the deductibles were so high and the premiums were high that the clients became cash poor or insurance poor in a way, really, because when they actually needed services, and luckily my services usually aren't like emergency services as a chiropractor. I mean, we have people come in that can't walk through the door, but it's not like a ER or urgent care situation in many cases. So a lot of times our services are very, very affordable, and they wouldn't even come close to meeting that deductible. So I think it was disappointing to a lot of people when they realized that, geez, this really isn't going to help me a lot with my day-to-day life and my preventative care stuff that I need, whether it's chiropractic care, dental care, or even just GP visits and stuff. So prior to the Obamacare, our state had a Medicaid system that actually it needed some tweaking, but I liked how it worked better for the client because it would pay, you know, for those that were unemployed or disabled, they had coverage through the state on that Medicaid plan. But then if they started to work or maybe they were self-employed, they had a good month, they were making more money, rather than get kicked off and lose all their benefits like they have happened to them now, they might have to pay a slight premium. So it was kind of an ability to pay or a graduated scale type model, which in that case then, too, the state was able to recoup some of the cost of insuring those Medicaid clients. So I did like that. I'd like to see something like that come in the future. It takes a lot of work. I mean, the idea of everybody having universal health care is absolutely great, but it's just financially, it's very, very difficult for the taxpayer, very, very difficult for the government to do. And then the universal or the single-payer healthcare system, people lose a lot of choices. They also lose quality of care. You look at some of the countries that have that type of system. So I would like to have something come back where, you know, there's a graduated scale type premium and then open up the providers a little bit more. And what I mean by that is the Chiropractic Association, actually, the last couple legislative sessions has proposed this any willing provider legislation. What that is that's something that allows if a patient's outside of their region or outside of their area, if they want to go to a provider, say they're going to UW-Stout and they live over in Milwaukee, they're able to come to me as a provider and have benefits. Right now, if they're out of their PPO, their geographical area, a lot of times they don't have coverage, or if they do have coverage, it's out-of-network benefits, which then costs the insurance or costs the patient more money and the insurance company more money as well. So I think some of those things need to happen. I think people need to have choices in their providers where they go, a little bit more open networks and a little bit more competition between insurance plans.
John Calabrese, how do you propose dealing with healthcare as a legislator?
I think the first thing we need to do is help people learn on the ground how the system works and why it works in the way that it does. On the Dunn County Board, I see on the administrative committee every month when the vouchers come through how much just this one county spends on health care for its employees. And then I think about what we have to cut in every budget annually. It is nothing short of madness. And if you jump up to Washington, D.C., everything comes from the top down. And if you can think about the fact that we are in an unprecedented global pandemic and neither of the two parties are even pretending to or even lying about to get votes, covering everybody, even just during the pandemic, let alone providing universal coverage. And the reason that they don't offer that, the reason that it's not discussed in a serious way, is because the health insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies have purchased our for-sale government in which we've legalized bribery. And at the top, they purchased both parties. And so what you can do down here at the state level, first, you let people know how that works, and then you let people know the benefits of accepting the Medicaid expansion, and that it's not, as the Republicans say, expanding a welfare program. It is federally available dollars that we desperately need, and the fact that we have not taken that expansion over the last decade has led to many deaths, studies have shown, and it's also led to the closing of 40-plus nursing homes all around the state because it's not just about getting more people on Medicaid. It's about the reimbursement rate for people who attend or need to go to the nursing homes, and the rates don't keep up with what the nursing home needs to keep their doors open. And so you first take the Medicaid expansion. You build from there with a goal of getting everyone covered, and if people have been propagandized enough to believe that healthcare for all is some sort of pipe dream in the richest country that the face of the earth has ever seen, then we can turn that propaganda back the other way. And we can view healthcare like we view the police or like we view the firefighters, that it should be something that we need. And when I hear people say that other countries don't do it so well and that you start to lose service, I sort of question where the American exceptionalism has gone, where the patriotism has gone, what happened to we are the best. If other countries can't do it, then we definitely can. We can do it wonderfully. We can provide health care for everybody. So you state that at the beginning. You start from the bottom, take the Medicaid expansion, work towards coverage for everybody, and you don't stop until you get it.
Staying one more time on the topic of health care, we got a call from Charlene in Mondovi who wanted to ask about medical marijuana. Now, both Democrats and Republicans in Wisconsin have supported legalizing marijuana for medical and or recreational purposes. John Calabrese, what pros and cons do you see regarding legalizing marijuana in Wisconsin?
I see nothing but pros, and I don't mean P-R-O-S-E. it has been proven incredibly beneficial medically, and recreationally it has proven to be a huge revenue producer for the states that have legalized it. And, you know, if we weren't living in a state that's drowning in alcohol and has liquor stores on every corner, then maybe that would be a different discussion. But alcohol is exponentially more dangerous, and it has been proven so. And the influence of groups like the Tavern League have led to Wisconsin dragging its feet. I think we need to move to legalize it medically, and we need to move to legalize it recreationally. It needs to be taxed and regulated, and I believe citizens should also have the ability to grow their own up to a certain amount. I think the time is now, and I think that we can't even comprehend the benefits that there might be if we could study it more and it became a part of our culture.
Clint Moses, do you support any of the legislation Republicans have put forward in favor of legalizing marijuana?
I hope my opponent's sitting because he might fall out of his chair, but I do actually. My view on this has matured, you might say. When I was in school, you know, they taught us all that marijuana and these drugs were bad and we should avoid them, it's illegal and all this stuff. And I'll tell you what, as a health care, as an alternative or a natural health care provider, I've seen the benefits. About 10 years ago, I had a patient, we'll call her Liz. Liz was about 90 years old and wasn't getting great results. You know, she'd get an adjustment, she'd feel better for a little bit, and just wasn't really making a comeback at all. Well, Liz got hooked up with one of her sister's friends, we'll call it, maybe a dealer, and started utilizing marijuana. And this is a true story. I wish I was making this up or some comical thing or something like that. But, and all of a sudden, she started doing drastically better. Her adjustments were holding. She was feeling better. She was out exercising, walking. And this lady's like 90, maybe even 93 years old. And it was the first time I saw real health benefits from the use of marijuana. And like I said, she offered to hook other clients. Of course, this was 10 years ago, so I am not a dispensary or anything like that, full disclosure. I don't want the FDA or USDA showing up at my facility later today, but there are definitely health benefits. I do think if the government got in and regulated this, I think there's some safety that would benefit from it for public safety as well. And then, of course, the revenue side of it. It doesn't show any worse side effects. My opponent actually brought up all the side effects and health ramifications with alcoholism in the state of Wisconsin. Marijuana seems to be a much safer option as far as that is concerned, so I don't see why there's a double standard and why it would not be covered. So I actually look forward to co-authoring or helping sponsoring a bill on medicinal marijuana. So,
very good. We're moving toward the end of the program. I do have an email I'd like to get to from Ellen in Menominee, who says, ask the candidates, have you signed the candidate pledge for fair maps to end gerrymandering in Wisconsin? If not, why not, when 72% of Wisconsin voters are in favor of nonpartisan redistricting? And each week we hear from callers interested in the candidates' positions on political redistricting. Whoever wins the 29th Assembly race is likely to play a role in redrawing those lines as a member of the legislature, at least if they're in the minority party, the way things have worked of late. Even though one of the guidelines for redistricting is to respect county boundaries, the current maps really chop up Dunn and St. Croix counties. There are four different assembly districts in Dunn and four different assembly districts in St. Croix County. Clint Moses, how can the legislature draw fair maps? Should they be drawn by another party? And have you signed the fair maps pledge that Ellen asks about?
Boy, and you know, Ellen's asked me this one personally, so I know exactly where she's coming from on this. And if it was truly nonpartisan, I would be all over it. I, you know, as a candidate running, especially in the primary and stuff, and when I was looking around getting signatures and nomination papers, especially here in Menominee, both John and I live actually kind of in the northeast corner, basically, of our district. And I've got a number of friends that live, like, say, Taner Township, Sherman Township, Red Cedar, the other side of the city of Menominee, and they're not in our 29th. So I knew the gerrymandering and these maps were crazy before, but as a candidate, I've really experienced it firsthand. So if it was completely nonpartisan, I'd be all over it. That'd be awesome. But when you've got, in this case, these are fair maps that the governor gets to decide who's going to draw the map, who would agree to that? That doesn't sound fair at all. It would happen both ways. I mean, if Governor Walker was still in office, you know, the same issue. The Democrats would be crying foul. So I, something needs to be done with this long term. I don't see it changing in our political structure the way it is right now. Whoever's in power is going to want to draw the map and cut me out of the 29th or John in it or whatever. So I'm not in favor of this proposal that we've got in front of us in the fall election.
John Calabrese, back to Ellen's question. Have you signed the Fair Maps pledge she's talking about? And what redistricting model would you support to ensure fair representation?
I have signed the pledge. And one of the things about being a representative that has sort of gone by the wayside, I remember Speaker Voss saying something recently about that he doesn't look at the polls. As a representative, you're supposed to be the representative. If I become the representative of this district and I hear from 72% of my constituents that they want something, then they're going to get it. It's not what I want. It's what the people want. But since you asked the question, I am in favor of fair maps. I believe that there are states, I know that there are states who have figured out a good way to do it, a scientific way, a way based on geography and based on population centers. And there is definitely a way to do it, and we just need to have the will. Clint is right. You can't trust the Republicans to draw it. You can't trust the Democrats to do it. Nobody is nonpartisan, but we should have scientific basis. People present a plan, and then it gets approved if it's good enough.
John Calabrese and Clint Moses, the candidates for Assembly in the 29th District, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Dean.
Thank you.
Catherine Thomas pulled together today's show as producer and call screener. Kate Spranger and Patrick Eikens manage the publicity and archives. Sue Johnson and Bonnie Clark are our transcriptionists. Next week on the West Side, join us to debate the issues as candidates for the 75th Assembly seat, 75th District Assembly seat, Republican Dave Armstrong of Rice Lake and Democrat John Ellenson of Shell Lake join us. This is your last chance to make a pledge during the West Side during this fall member drive. Still time to do so at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and you've been listening to The West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.